Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Parliament returns from recess this week, and to start things off, Andrew Marr was joined by the Home Secretary for a wide-ranging interview. Sajid Javid, who took up his post in April after the resignation of Amber Rudd, was keen to signal that the Home Office was open to change under his leadership.
Tory MPs have been writing to you, I know about this, which is highly experienced and capable would-be immigrants, particularly doctors.
So-called tier two
tier
visas.
Now, we have thousands upon thousands of vacancies for doctors in the NHS up and down the country. Last year, your department refused the visas of 1,500 would-be doctors who wanted to come from overseas and help us in our NHS. One NHS manager described this policy as completely balmy. What's your view?
I think I can understand when the policy was put in place, there was a cap that was established at 20,700 a year of these highly skilled immigrants. And for years and years, that cap wasn't hit. It's only in recent months the cap's being hit. And the doctor that you refer to there is probably referring to the fact that that includes a number of doctors that are qualified, that our NHS needs, that are being turned away.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems
very odd, doesn't it?
I see the problem with that. And it is something that I'm taking a fresh look at. I know a number of my colleagues certainly want me to take a look at this, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And I hope to think about this more carefully and see what can be done.
Javid was also notably reluctant to endorse the government's policy of reducing immigration to the tens of thousands.
I'm asking you, as Home Secretary, are you personally committed to the tens of thousands policy?
I'm committed to our manifesto, but what that means is that over the next few years, I'll be working towards rightly reducing net migration and bringing it to lower sustainable levels.
But you haven't yet said that you're committed to the tens of thousands.
I've said I'm committed to the manifesto, and that commits every Conservative to the commitments that were made.
I don't know what Ruth Davidson would say to that. She says, I see neither the sense nor the need to stick to an immigration figure devised nearly a decade ago, which has never been met and does not fit the requirements of our country. She's right, isn't she? Or why is she not right?
Well, you get Ruth on your show and you can ask her more about what she said. But
it's fairly clear.
I think where Ruth and I would absolutely agree, and I think every Conservative colleague of mine, is that overall migration today, net migration, is still too high. It's coming down. It's down significantly from where it was a few years ago. And so we need a policy for the longer term that's going to bring it down to that sustainable level. So we want to absolutely have this policy that welcomes people that want to make a contribution, brings those high skills in that we need. But we do need a more sustainable level of net migration.
And tens of thousands is still something that you're happy with?
It's a commitment in our manifesto.
Since the historic referendum result in the Republic of Ireland last month, there have been renewed calls for reform of the abortion laws in Northern Ireland. However, the leader of the DUP, Arlene Foster, has told Sky's David Blevins why she is unwilling to countenance the idea.
I think what we need to do is be able to put forward a rational explanation as to why we hold those particular views. I have a right to hold a different view than others hold. That's called tolerance. I have had emails from people in the Republic of Ireland feeling very disenfranchised, can't quite believe what has happened in the Republic of Ireland. I have had emails from nationalists and Republicans in Northern Ireland not quite believing what is going on and saying they will be voting for the DUP because they believe that we're the only party that supports the unborn. You know, there are many people who are shocked in the Republic of Ireland today, and whilst I completely acknowledge the result that happened last Saturday, that doesn't take away from the fact that there's a substantial minority of people in the Republic of Ireland today who feel very disenfranchised, who feel very alone, who don't feel that anybody speaks for them anymore. And I think people need to be very much aware of that.
People will find it hard to believe that you're suggesting some Sinn Féin voters are telling you they're going to vote DUP because of your position on abortion.
Yeah, well, you know, people vote for different reasons, and I think that's very clear. For some people, this is the number one issue for them when it comes to casting their vote. And I think people need to understand that in the wider UK. It is such a big issue here in Northern Ireland. Obviously, some people don't see it as such a big issue and they will vote for other reasons. But I think it would be wrong not to acknowledge that there are those who, in my own constituency and right across Northern Ireland, who feel so very strongly about this issue that they will cast their vote on that basis.
However, Labour's Stella Creasy is hoping to put forward proposals that would guarantee a woman's right to abortion services across the whole of the United Kingdom, including Northern Ireland. Creasy outlined her case for doing so to Sophie Ridge.
Now, You're taking matters into your own hands here in Westminster. You're planning this cross-party coalition to try and move to the decriminalisation of abortion in Northern Ireland. Just explain what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah, actually what we're talking about is the decriminalisation of abortion for the United Kingdom. This is a United Kingdom piece of legislation that we need to deal with called the Offences Against the Person Act that was written 150 years ago in 1861 and makes abortion a criminal act. It's actually a criminal act across the whole of the United Kingdom. Simply 50 years ago, we had legislation that gave exemptions in England and Wales. That puts abortion into the same category of criminal acts as rape, as child stealing, and as blowing somebody up with gunpowder. Now, I just think in 2018, nobody in the United Kingdom can support that. But what that means in Northern Ireland is that if you are raped and you become pregnant as a result of that and seek a termination, you would face a stronger prison sentence than the person who attacked you. That cannot be sustainable. And indeed, I think that's why the majority of the Northern Irish opinion polls show us that the public there would like to see change. They'd like to see the criminal law being taken out of this and medical law being put in place. They can't do that. Arlene Foster cannot write laws on abortion in the Stormont Assembly if it gets reconstituted unless we repeal this piece of UK legislation. So actually what we're doing is being respectful of devolution, but also requiring them to take action on this, because by removing that piece of legislation, there will be a gap.
You see, you're saying that you're being respectful of devolution. I think Arlene Foster would probably take issue with that. And the thing about, of course, the referendum in Ireland is that it was women who overwhelmingly voted, well, everyone, obviously, but women who kind of overwhelmingly voted to decriminalise abortion, they made the decision for themselves. So why should it be that politicians in Westminster decide what's right for people in Northern Ireland?
Well, at the moment, the only woman with any choice over abortion in Northern Ireland is Arlene Foster, and she can't.
But she's elected in Northern Ireland.
She's just said in your interview that she doesn't want to see people in Northern Ireland being treated differently to people in the United Kingdom. But by repealing this piece of legislation, we will not write abortion law in Northern Ireland. We will simply leave a gap that the civil servants and indeed the Assembly will need to fill. And also, frankly, I don't see why Arlene Foster's views should prevent repeal of legislation that also affects my constituents. You know, when I hear the DUP saying that we shouldn't be talking about this in the United Kingdom Parliament, I hear them telling them that they have more control over what happens to my constituents than we do about what happens in Northern Ireland.
And finally, the composer and former Conservative peer Andrew Lloyd Webber has given his verdict on the recent defeats that the House of Lords has inflicted on the government's plans for Brexit.
You were in the House of Lords, of course, for a long time, and then you left because you thought that Brexit was so important you couldn't give enough time to really thinking about it and speaking about it as you would want to. Since you've left, the House of Lords has voted against the government 15 times. Now, I know you were a kind of slightly easy-ozy Remainer in the end, but I wonder what you think about the peers now.
Well, I was a Remainer. I do not think that that would have been an issue for me in the House of Lords. I do not think you could possibly be part of an unelected House and vote against the will of the people. If that is that, I mean, that seems to me to be wrong. It's a difficult one. I myself felt that the House of Lords had become really very political. I joined it 20 years ago, and I was put in then, and it was a very different place. Mm. And I'm not a politician. Ultimately, I'm a composer. I've got a huge amount going on in America at the moment, and I just didn't think I'd have the time to be there.
And that's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with 12 issues for just £12 and a free limited edition Spectator Moleskin notebook. Just visit spectator.co.uk/pod offer. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.